Good afternoon, Merry Christmas. This is the December 25th edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Now, this is a very special edition of the show. Normally, we are coming to you live and in living color on Blog Talk Radio, but being that it is Christmas Day, the powers that be within the Torch were nice enough to give us the day off, and so this is a pre-recorded episode, so we are not live like we normally are, so we cannot accept a phone call like we normally do. But I would encourage you to still keep sending the emails in, even over the next couple of weeks. The email address is always open. It is mmalivecast@gmail.com. That is mmalivecast@gmail.com. Now, for this very special Christmas episode, we've brought in our regular co-host, Zach Haydorn. Zach, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Robert. Merry Christmas, and Merry Christmas to all the listeners out there.
Yeah, I'm curious to see who listens to this, if they are actually listening to us on Christmas Day. You know, some people might be traveling, or maybe you're sick of your family. So
yeah. I mean, like, yeah. So I like to think a lot of people have some long car rides to tend to get to a family dinner or family gathering or whatnot. So if that's the case, you know, glad to be with you guys.
Definitely. Now, for this episode, what we want to do is look back at the year 2017. Now, we are recording this, just for full transparency, on December 17th. So we are considering everything that happened in the year of MMA, with the exception of UFC 219, because while we're recording it, it has not happened yet. So if a bunch of earth-shattering stuff happens at that event, let's see. If we're still on the air a year from now, UFC 219 will be part of our 2018 recap, and I know you listeners will hold us to that.
Yes.
Okay, Zach, I want to just ask you real quick, what are your overall impressions of how MMA operated, and what kind of year was it for you, kind of looking in from the outside in?
Yeah, when I look back at 2017, it falls into kind of two buckets for me. Overall, my thoughts are it's been a pretty good year. I think there's been month to month and, you know, week to week, really intriguing fights. I think we've seen the rise of some up and coming fighters. We've seen a bunch of guys take the next step in their careers. So on that front, I really think that it's been a fun year. It's been a good year for the UFC, Bellator. It's been solid. Solid is the term that just floats through my head. The one thing that I think the year was missing was the big kind of year-making super fight. I mean, you had Conor McGregor against Floyd Mayweather. I'm not counting that. I'm kind of separating that out since it didn't happen inside of a UFC octagon. But yes, that event was huge and that event was great. But inside of the UFC, you didn't have that, you know, 1.2 million buy pay-per-view like you had a couple times last year with Conor McGregor against Nate Diaz twice and McGregor and Alvarez. So the year was missing, in my opinion, that kind of marquee fight, but it was a model of consistency throughout the year, week to week. I think if you did add in a couple of those super marquee fights, then the year goes from solid to really, really, really great, which is what I think they'll be going for through and into 2018. I do think, though, this has been the year of the UFC trying to find that next guy. You know, it's clear that Conor McGregor is not going to be a guy they can lean on regularly. Ronda Rousey doesn't appear like she's going to be something that they can go back to draw and pop that big number. So I think the UFC has been looking at different options. Different fighters are on their way to stepping up. And I think 2018 is going to be the year that ultimately kind of irons that picture out, and 2017 is setting the table and has set the table for that to happen next year.
Yeah, it's definitely a transition year, and maybe, like you said, a bit of an identity crisis year where we don't really know what the UFC is going to look like in the future based on what happened this year. We know maybe what it's not going to look like and who it's not going to include, but we don't really know where they are going to strap the rocket to in the future, because this year, every time they had some momentum going in one direction, it seems like something always got in the way of that momentum. This kind of reminds me, if you look back in the history of pro wrestling, it almost reminds you of the 2002-2003 era, right? After the Attitude Era, where you literally had, in similar fashion to the UFC, your two big pillars with The Rock and Austin transitioning into different lines of work. And it took them, I mean, you might even say it took them years. They've never fully recovered from that, even though they do very well business-wise. And I feel like the UFC is in a similar position than that. And that's my overall assessment, too, is that it was a good year for hardcore MMA fans in that a lot of the fight cards were actually pretty good. But if I'm the guy who just watches ESPN and you know, buys the big pay-per-views, there wasn't a lot to get too excited about this year. The biggest event in MMA was a boxing match.
Right, exactly.
That throws everything a little out of proportion to what we are normally used to, where, like last year, you had five cards that went over a million buys. There's just no comparison between the top level of 2016 and the top level of 2017.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more on that. And to your point about, like, it's like the UFC some of their cards almost got there. It's like, you know, we almost saw the resurgence, a full resurgence of John Jones coming back, taking the title, and then it gets, you know, snatched away. And it's just like they never got on a roll with those kind of things that, you know, could have lined up and yielded something big. They just never fully materialized, a lot of times because of things outside of, you know, Dana White's and the UFC's control. But a little bit unfortunate in that regard.
Where do you see the prospects of everything that happened this year? How do you see 2018 shaping up for the UFC?
I think it's going to be a really interesting year. And I think we're going to get more of that transition feel. I don't think, you know, like you said, you take away Conor McGregor, you take away Ronda, just like you took away Rock and Austin. And it takes a while to find those next stars, those next, you know, leaders of the company. But I think the UFC has a lot of, UFC in particular has a lot of logs on the fire where they could get new stars from. You know, Francis Ngannou is a guy who I think, you know, depending on what happens, like in his fight against Miocic at UFC 220, right out of the gate in 2018, he could be a guy that becomes really big for the UFC. I mean, he's got highlight reel written all over him. He talks well, and he backs everything up once he's in there. I think he could be a really good champion and someone that can carry the load for the UFC. It's going to take him time to develop, you know, develop the trust of the company and start pulling in humongous buys like million-dollar buys. But I think the prospect of it is there. Tony Ferguson is another guy who I'm really high on for next year. I think next year he's going to fight Conor McGregor. That's my prediction. And if he can win that fight, I mean, he automatically launches himself, you know, into another realm of popularity for the company and as a fighter himself. So I just think there's logs in that fire that maybe they'll get heated up, and it will take time to see. It remains to be seen, but the opportunity is there. And I think that's one thing that UFC did really well, is they kind of set themselves up where they just need a couple of those guys to hit, and then they're off to the races.
The issue of trust, I think, goes both ways. I think the promotion has to trust a fighter to sell well, to keep their nose clean, to do all those things. I think the MMA fan base also lacks trust in their top stars right now. A guy like Max Holloway, who by every measurable or tangible thing that we prognosticate, he should be a really big star for the UFC, and we don't know, and he still may be that, but you feel like anybody that's on the rise, because we know they're not yet that Rousey McGregor, there seems to be a bit of temperance on the MMA community for not totally buying into that person as a star. I wonder how much a guy like Jon Jones has actually played into that and sort of betrayed the trust of MMA fans. Yeah. And I think that has something to do with it. It's definitely, I think, one of the big stories going into next year will be to watch. They laid a foundation for some guys this year, for the Justin Gaethjes and the women, the new women's division, and you have Rose Namajunas. Can they build on that? I am really looking forward to what 2018 brings us in terms of stardom.
Yeah, I think you really hit it on the head. I mean, they've kind of used this year to build that foundation, and now, you know, the fighters themselves have to step up and, you know, like you said, gain the fans' trust, gain the company's trust, win fights. And you know, from there, you know, the world is their oyster. But, you know, it takes time and it doesn't happen overnight. And I think 2017 will be looked at as a year that kind of represents that.
Definitely some big things to watch out for. Let's go to our first break now. And on the other side of the break, we're going to rip off the gimmick of the Oscars and the Grammys, and we're going to give some year-end awards for this year in MMA. Hang in there, guys.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Prichard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
And we're back. I am Robert Vajos, along with Zach Hadorn, on this special Christmas edition of MMA Talk for pro wrestling fans. Like I said at the top of the show, the phone lines aren't open right now, but I do want you to keep the number in mind for the next time we're live, and that is 515-605-9345. And as always, send an email anytime, 24/7. The conversation never stops. Send the email to MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. And I really would implore you to use that email address to chime in on what we're talking about right now. We're going to give some of our year-in-review awards. What was the best fight? What was the most biggest disappointment of the year? Who was fighter of the year? That's something that definitely we want to hear your input on. And we'll read it on there and we'll discuss your choices. Okay, so for our first category, which is always the funnest category, I think, when you do year-end MMA awards, fight of the year. Now, the way we've structured this, me and Zach have not discussed ahead of time any of our picks. So we're going to be coming at this fresh, giving our top three or so in each category, and then we're going to discuss what we have. Zach, what were your top three fights this year?
All right, my top three fights. Do you want them in an order or in no particular order?
If you have them in order, go 3-1. If you don't have them in order, just lay them out.
Okay, 3-1. I'm going to go for fight of the year. I'm going Max Holloway against Jose Aldo, number one. I'm going Yancy Medeiros against Alex Oliveira. And then Justin Gaethje against Eddie Alvarez. That's my top three. Now, let me break it down a little bit. I almost put Michael Johnson against Justin Gaethje in my top three as well, but bumped it for Holloway versus Aldo. I wanted to have, you know, the other two fights, Gaethje and Alvarez and Medeiros Oliveira, are kind of like, they're very similar fights in that they're just absolute brawls with both guys just going to war against each other, taking punches on the chin, delivering punches left and right, and it just both action-packed fights. So, and they deserve to be on this list. I chose Aldo and Holloway because I went back and actually rewatched it, and it's a clinic by Holloway. And I just really felt like a fight like that where you can actually look back and appreciate a fighter being so prepared and executing a game plan flawlessly and executing the strategy flawlessly, and then just decimating and supplanting himself at the top of a division that's been owned by Aldo for so long. I really think a performance like that had to be included. So that's where I stand with my top three of the year.
I would like to say I'm totally different than you and on a different wavelength, but I have a very similar line of thinking, but I did not have that Holloway-Aldo one in there. I think that's an interesting choice just because that's such a landmark-changing event in the sport that maybe in 2 years from now we'll really know what the impact of that was.
Yeah.
Okay, so here are my top three, and I'll go from 3-1. And this is my off-the-board pick. Jessica Andrade versus Claudia Gadelha from UFC Fight Night 117. And then my top two are more in the mainstream line of my second one. I have Yancy Medeiros and Alex Oliveira from the UFC 218 prelims. And for my number one, I actually have Justin Gaethje versus Michael Johnson. The Eddie Alvarez one I was thinking about, but I just don't know that it's a really entertaining fight, but it was more of a – I don't know. I liked the Gaethje Michael Johnson one better. That's just what it comes down to. And I easily think that the Alvarez Gaethje one could have been second, but it just felt a little cheap to have two Gaethje fights.
Right, yeah, at the top. That's the same thing I said. I'm looking at it and I'm going, I mean, both fights could have, I agree, they could have been on there, but it's like, man, they're so similar. And I, you know, they both had a lot of drama in it, and it, you know, it's just, they're very similar fights. So I'm, you know, I think it makes sense to have one of them on, but maybe not both.
Yeah, and in my wild card match with Andrade and Claudia Gadelha, I don't think a lot of people probably even remember that fight. That was a very underwhelming fight, that UFC in Japan card. And the fight wasn't necessarily good, but I found it extremely entertaining the way Jessica Andrade just beat the ever-living daylights out of Claudia Gadelha, but the fight would not end. And I just think it's something that for the time that it was on, I was completely hooked by everything I saw, even if the fight was one-sided. In sports, I don't always think that the most entertaining games or events are, they don't necessarily have to be a back and forth thing. There can be a blowout occasionally that is like that car wreck that you have to look at. But I think Yancy Medeiros and Alex Oliveira, that probably, if you've surveyed 100 people, that's going to be in everybody's like top three list. That probably ends up being the consensus fight of the year, even if it doesn't top one of these Gaethje performances.
Yeah, I agree, and you know, it's weird because like in a way it kind of popped up out of nowhere. Like I know going into that fight, I thought it would be a good fight, but I don't think anybody expected it to be what it was, and it was just incredible. Like every minute you thought that thing was going to be over, it wasn't, and it had everything you want in a exciting fight.
All right, let's move on to our next category, which I think was a very difficult category to handicap this year. Fighter of the Year. Fighter of the Year, usually there's a consensus top two or three guys. This is a year that I kind of feel like nobody had that great of a year, especially at the top. So it was actually very difficult doing this one. I'll read mine, and then I'll go over to Zach and get his. So I actually have a tie for third place between Rose Namajunas. She had the victories over Michelle Waterson and the big victory over Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and Vulcan Uzdemir, who beat Owen St. Preux, Misha Cirkunov, and Jimmy Manuwa. I had a hard time distinguishing between the two of those. Namajunas had a better year, I think, at the top because she slayed the big dragon, but Uzdemir went from nothing to a title contender, and that happened really within the framework of the past 12 months. So that's why I felt like he should be mentioned. My number two, I had Robert Whittaker, which was another difficult one because he didn't get to face, you know, the GSP or Bisping, but I think there's no doubt in the world that he's the best middleweight in the world, and he's going to get another shot to prove that against Luke Rockhold. He had the big win over Jacare Souza at that UFC on Fox card, and that was significant because Jacare really seemed like he was the guy that was surging to get in that middleweight mix, and Whittaker quite forcefully put an end to that. He's also the only guy that's ever beaten Yoel Romero. He did that at UFC 213, he didn't just land a shot on Romero and take him out. He really looked dominant against Romero, made Romero look human for the first time ever. And my number one is probably my biggest hot take of this whole thing. But remember, this is Fighter of the Year, not Most Popular Fighter. I have the very polarizing Tyron Woodley as my Fighter of the Year.
Interesting.
He had two title defenses. He beat Wonderboy at UFC 209, Damian Maia at UFC 214. Two absolute snoozer fights. So they're not fights that are getting anyone inspired. But when you look at what he did, he had to go out there against this striking karate expert in Stephen Wonderboy Thompson and neutralize him. And then he had to go there against a jiu-jitsu expert in Damian Maia and neutralize him so well. It was a very underwhelming year as far as his fights went. When you look at what he actually did and the level he's doing it at, and the fact that it seems like the UFC can't get the belt off him quick enough, but yet they're going to find a difficulty doing it because of the level of fighter he is, I've awarded Tyron Woodley as Fighter of the Year. So, Zach, my list was as wacky as can be. What's your list?
Your list is actually in a strange world, but it's very similar to mine. Two out of three of the top three are the same. I had a distant fourth that I wanted to just quickly discuss, and it's Max Holloway. I think the guy really took a lot of steps this year. I think, and I know he fought the same opponent twice, and I get that, and I think that dings him a little bit. But his performances in the Aldo fights were just so incredibly dominant. He really separated himself from the pack in that division and made himself into a big star for the UFC. So he almost cracked the top three. I had number three, Tyron Woodley, for much of the same reasons that you spouted out. He's certainly not a flashy fighter. He hasn't been an excited fighter this year. But look, I mean, he got the job done. He was active. He won all his fights. There was really no doubt about any of them. And he, at the end of the year here, is champion. So look, nobody, you don't. I mean, for a lot of reasons, you want to be an exciting fighter in the UFC, but nobody says that you have to be. You just need to go in there and get the job done, walk in with the belt, and walk out with the belt. And he did that habitually throughout this year. My number two, just like you, Robert Whittaker. The guy I also had in my notes here about beating Yoel Romero. Watching Romero fight, I kind of had this attitude of like, I don't know if anyone's going to be able to beat this guy. He's quick, he's fast, and Whittaker was able to ground him and get the job done. It's unfortunate because I think his year was held up a little bit because of the Michael Bisping GSP quote unquote nonsense. You know, I think had that fight not happened, I think we would have seen even more great things from him this year. But he was held up like the rest of the division was. And for my number one, I'm going a little bit outside of the box, but thinking big picture with this one, for the year and for the history of the UFC, and I'm going with Demetrius Johnson. He is one of my favorite fighters, and he's like Tyron Woodley in a lot of ways. I don't think he gets the credit that he deserves because of the division that he's in and because of the style of the fighter that he is. But I don't think we can overlook the fact that this year he broke the record for consecutive championship defenses in the UFC, and that's a massive accomplishment. It's a really big moment for the company and for him, and he's just such a good fighter that nobody is really on his level, and because of that, it almost like it hinders him to move forward because there's nobody out there that can really stand toe to toe to him in the division. That said, I think there's big things looming in 2018 against TJ Dillashaw. Hopefully a big, pseudo mega fight like that could kind of change opinions a little bit. But I think the year was too good for him to not be in this conversation. And by taking down that record, to me, it sticks out. So Demetrius Johnson, Fighter of the Year, in my book.
That's a solid choice. I consider Johnson for my spot. I ultimately didn't pull the trigger just because of the quality of opponents this year. But I think if you ever wanted to give Demetrius Johnson a Lifetime Achievement Award, if that was such a thing, I think this year, This was the year that Mighty Mouse was coronated and he was recognized, even though he still has a long list of people who just do not like the guy or believe he's duck guys or don't give him the credit because of his competition. And look, I think it's fair to say that his accomplishments maybe do not match up to what GSP or Anderson Silva did in their heyday. With that said, I think this is the year that he was cemented, though, in bronze or whatever you want to say, as a top guy in the UFC annals. And I think he's a guy to watch. His 2018 should be fascinating because if he takes a super fight with Dillashaw, I think that'll answer a lot of questions one way or the other about just how good this guy is. And then after that, where do we go? I think that's something that it will just be a fascinating, underrated story to follow in the upcoming year.
Absolutely, I agree. I'm a big advocate for that Dillashaw fight, and I hope it gets worked out. I hope he takes it and can, I don't know, kind of use it as an opportunity to silence some critics that might be not on board with him.
For our next category, a fun category, if not a bit sadistic, we're going to go with Knockout of the Year. What were your three best knockouts this year, Zach?
All right, my top three. Number three was Holm Correa at Fight Night Singapore. That the twisting kick to the face, and I think the kick itself was highlight reel. I think it was awesome to watch, but I think the setup to that kick is what made me have that holy crap moment more, because Correa was taunting Holm, taunting her, And then out of nowhere, Holm just clocks her with that kick to the face. Love that moment, like you said, in a sadistic way. Number two, and this gentleman is going to be on the plus side of a ranking and on the negative side of a ranking here in a second. But Overeem over Hunt at UFC 209, the knee to the face that just pasted Hunt, number two. And then on the flip side, Overeem gets knocked out. Knockout of the year, Francis Ngannou over Alistair Overeem at UFC 218. I mean, I don't know how you could pick against that one, but it was a heck of a punch, a scary punch, and one that nobody's going to forget for a very, very long time.
That's an interesting list. I like how the Overeem giveth and Overeem taketh on your list. That's a perfect microcosm of what the UFC heavyweight division is and how up and down that everything in that division. Like, you have a 40-year-old guy like Overeem who also knocked out a 40-plus-year-old guy in Mark Hunt on that list. And it's just – it's amazing how – those guys, they'll never die. Like, we'll never not have a world where, like, Fabricio Verdum and over Mark right. Hunter are like, Mark Hunt is suing the UFC for RICO violations, and he's still in the UFC. So, yeah, heavyweights never die. Thing,
yeah, and that's, like, to me, too, that's what makes Ngannou's 2018 look so interesting because, you know, you've had so many familiar faces in that, you know, slogging down the title scene for a while. It's nice to have a kind of a fresh face in there and a fresh face doing damage.
Okay, now let me give you mine. And there is one similarity, which, and I'll just get it out of the way. My number one was the Ngannou knockout of Overeem. I don't think anything more needs to be said about that. I think that's an all-time highlight reel. I think, you know, whenever they re-edit the Face the Pain music in 5 years, that's going to be on the list there. Granted that there still is a UFC and that concussions haven't ruined the whole sport, because if there was ever any evidence of the danger of UFC, I think it would be that footage right there.
Yeah.
Okay, for number two, I'm going to reverse than what we've been going. The Marlon Moraes knockout over Aljamain Sterling from really a couple weeks ago, UFC Fight Night 123. Not the most vicious knockout. It's more of the case that Marlon Moraes hit the right spot. But for how scary that was, I think that really deserves to be mentioned. Not the hardest thing, more of the artistry of a knockout than the power of a knockout, which was how the Ngannou one went. And for my number three, I'm going to go off the board. I'm going to bring Bellator into the conversation for the first time today.
Oh.
Aaron Pico's knockout of Justin Lin from Bellator 183. Aaron Pico, the highly touted prospect from Bellator, got on the second ever Bellator pay-per-view, was made to look very foolish very quickly against a guy who sells furniture for a living. And then he goes into this fight against Justin Lin, who I guess he could have been like a great opponent for Mike Perry. He came out with like some death metal music. Looked like very much he was in a MMA time warp. And Aaron Pico took him out, and that guy, he was like a much skinnier version of Alistair Overeem when he was out. So that's something that I think when Aaron Pico has his legacy looked at, that's something we're gonna look back at. Oh yeah, remember when he knocked that guy out in 2017?
That's a good pick. Honestly, with recapping the year, I didn't think of that one. That's a good pick. Great call.
Yeah, Bellator happens almost as frequently as the UFC, so it just kind of gets ground up into that whole mess and the whole arena of MMA that it doesn't always get the credit. But yeah, a lot of these things, I think if we were to really examine Bellator more on its face, it would be on these lists more. It's just the bigger impact seems to happen in the UFC, so Bellator does tend to get shunned in these type of rankings.
Yep.
Okay, and then so for our final category that has to do with what goes on within a cage, submission of the year. I'll read mine first, and then I'll throw it to Zach. For my number three, I didn't have a single submission. I had a pair of submissions, and those would be the Von Flu chokes or Von Pru chokes by OSP. He, Oven St. Peru, of course. He had one in the UFC fight night against Marcos Rogero Lima, and then he had one against Yushin Okami in the St. Peru Okami fight night. And the reason why I put that on there is because those chokes have, interestingly enough, made OSP a unique standout in that division and someone to be reckoned with, when I don't know that he's at the level of fighter for what his ranking dictates, but because he has this very unique skill set with that one submission that all the grappling experts say is such an easy submission to get out of, but yet professional fighters cannot seem to get out of it, I think he deserves some credit for adding that to his arsenal and really making that part of his identity as a UFC fighter. Okay, for my number two, I have the very recent submission of Brian Ortega over Cub Swanson. It's always cool to see a guy that gets a submission when it looks like they shouldn't even be in the dominant position of the fight, and it's the way he pulled it out so effortlessly. Really reminded me of a throwback of the early UFCs when you had a guy like Hoist Gracie who was just getting submissions from every angle. And just like knockout of the year, I think there's going to be some consensus on the top submission of the year, and that would be Demetrius Johnson's armbar of Ray Borg, an all-time MMA highlight. That's something that if you forgot about it, go back and watch it. It's been gifted about a million times where Ray Borg gets thrown in the air and then gets caught with an armbar. Just an all-time classic finish to cap off a great run as a champion. What do you guys, your submission, Zach?
Yeah, well, two of mine are the same as yours, but the third is different. I went with the armbar Shevchenko over Pena. Looking at that replay, it's just, man, that arm that she's not really known for being a submission artist and was able just to lock in this just vicious, vicious armbar. If you go back and watch, I mean, it just makes you cringe. Also, the fact her first submission finish in 11 years. So I just thought, I don't know, that's just on my personal highlight reel, maybe a little bit outside the box, but something that I remember being like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. Number two is the same as yours, from Fight Night Fresno, Ortega over Swanson. The choke for me is kind of, I look to the to Swanson's quote after the fight where he says that he thought he was going to die in with Ortega having it cinched in as well as he did. And yeah, on top of that too, you know, like you said, kind of seeing it come out of nowhere and kind of Ortega being able to utilize that submission to win the fight that at that point he really wasn't in a position to win is really interesting and shows just, you know, how effective submissions like that can be. And then number one, as you mentioned, the consensus number one, that's going to be all around list throughout the year, the Demetrius Johnson over Ray Borg, the suplex into the finish. Yes, in memes and GIFs all around the world, but clearly the number one. And much like the Ngannou knockout punch, I think is going to be part of UFC's highlight reel for a very long time.
Yeah, it's funny. That submission reminds me of the Showtime kick many years ago by Anthony Pettis, where anything that it looks like it should only be done in a video game is always going to be a forever highlight. And Pettis is a good fighter, but I think he's always just going to be known for that kick more than anything else, more than winning a title. That's going to be his legacy, is jumping off the side of the cage. And I wonder how that shakes out for Mighty Mouse, because he's a guy, like we've said, who seems to be a bit underappreciated. You know, 15 years from now, is he going to be known as the guy who was so dominant in a weight class and broke all these records? Or are people going to remember him as, oh yeah, that guy that had that flying submission armbar thing? Only time will tell, I guess.
It's such an impressive, like, finish. It's like, you know, I think about it and I'm like, man, did he really, like, that couldn't be something that you practice, but he just pulled it out of nowhere and just, it was awesome. Really awesome moment for the year.
Okay, and then another award that we're going to go over, which was an extremely difficult yet not so difficult one to do. Event of the year. So this basically is any fight card that happened in the past year. What are your top three, Zach?
My top three go UFC 214. They're all in the UFC and they're all big boy events. So UFC 214 as number three. UFC 218 is a card that I personally just really enjoyed that. Like we talk about at the top of the show here about how, you know, the UFC kind of spent their year setting the table to create and find that next big star. Well, I think UFC 218 feature two of them in a really prominent way in Holloway and Ngannou. So I enjoyed that card a lot. I thought all the fights on it, including some fights in the prelims, were just really entertaining and really intriguing. And then for the event of the year, UFC 217, for a lot of different reasons, you know, it featured three championship fights and the return of GSP and all the controversy that surrounded that, it made for some incredible analysis. The fights on that card lived up to the expectations. All the titles changed hands. It was just a really exciting night for the UFC and for MMA fans, albeit with some controversy surrounding it. So all the stars kind of lined up for that one. So that's why it takes the number one slot for my event of the year. And then, honorable mention, I think it can't talk about this year without talking the Mayweather-McGregor event. I know it wasn't, a quote-unquote MMA fight card, but, it featured the biggest MMA star on the planet. And so I think it deserves honorable mention because you can't talk about 2017 without talking about that fight.
Yeah, and like we said before, it was the most visible MMA was this entire year was that card.
Right.
I had a pretty similar list here with one wild card. I'll rest in two honorable mentions because they just didn't make the cut, but they were worthy. I also had UFC 214, but I had it in my honorable mentions just because that was an important night and the night I felt like the whole MMA universe was engaged this year. And yeah. Part of it was because we were coming off of Mayweather-McGregor. And it just, it was prior to Mayweather-McGregor, but it just seemed so fresh. It seemed like such a breath of fresh air in the madness of everything that was going on. But looking back, I don't think the contents of that card were actually that great. There was exciting fights and fights we wanted to see the outcomes of, so it was good booking, but I don't know that card necessarily delivered. That's what kept it out of my top three. Another one that should get note was UFC 211, I think for very similar reasons. The card itself wasn't super exciting, but that was a heck of a piece of matchmaking by the UFC. It was one of those fight cards where every fight on it felt like the stakes were super high, and it was great for the winner and just terrible for the losers. And that's what more can you really ask for when you're booking something where the stakes, unlike Mayweather-McGregor, where the stakes are zero, that's something that the stakes are super high for. So I think those cards should merit consideration, even if I didn't put them on my list. Number three is, I think, so between the two of our lists, the only thing that wasn't a UFC pay-per-view, UFC Fight Night 110, or to bring it back to you, Mark Hunt versus Derek Lewis headline card in Auckland, New Zealand. Now, the card itself wasn't so too notable because there wasn't a ton of things that happened with a ton of consequence. However, that was just night of finishes where everything was over immediately, and it has that awkwardness on an FS1 fight card where they try to make it go so long, but when all the fights just lasted 30 seconds, it was really a sight to be seen, and an amazing card where the fights just keep ending and ending so quickly. The main event I thought was really interesting with Mark Hunt and Derek Lewis, where Mark Hunt, despite being about 1,000 years old or whatever we've crowned him, just took it to Derek Lewis, and Derek Lewis looked very unprepared. My top two, though, are pretty similar to yours. UFC 218, maybe top to bottom, was the best event of the year. Everything on it was really good. It was a good card on paper and a card that very much delivered. And I think the capping it off with the highlight reel knockout, and then you had the coronation number two of Max Holloway, kind of the affirmation of him as the next guy in that division, was really something special. And for number one, UFC 217. The weirdest night maybe in MMA history, where the title changed hands immediately. There was not these decision victories that we'll be talking about for a while. Every fight was definitive, but I don't think any of the fights, especially in the top three title matches, went the way that the consensus was totally picking them. I mean, people were on both sides of GSP Bisping, but you kind of give the nod to the middleweight in that fight. Nobody thought Nama Yunus was going to take out Jan Jacek. And while I think some people did pick Dillashaw to beat Garbrandt, it was still shocking when it happened, because I think that Garbrandt was on that same plane that we have Max Holloway in as the face of the future, and that'll change that night. So it was a fun night. This was kind of funny compiling this list, because I found that the bad UFC events this year were like really bad, and the good UFC events were really, really, really good. There didn't seem to be, especially with pay-per-views, there wasn't a lot of middle ground this year. Everything was very feast or famine this past year.
Right. I couldn't agree more. And that's why, looking at it in general, it gets kind of that just solid B grade from me as a year in review, because it had its ups and it also had its downs, and everything kind of evened out pretty good overall. But yes, some cards were tough to get through.
Okay, let's take another break, and we have two more categories, but they're bigger picture categories to go through. And then if we have a little bit of time on the back end, we will preview this weekend's UFC 219.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
And we're back with you, Zach Hadron and Robert Vallejos, looking back at the year 2017 in MMA. All right, Zach, what were the big stories of this year?
Okay, my top three for stories of the year go three, the scandal and subsequent second suspension for John Jones. I mean, like you said, coming out of UFC 214, MMA world and especially UFC fans were engaged on that night, and it was because of John Jones. For some reason, people are drawn to that guy. They like to see him succeed. He's a heck of a fighter, probably, you know, without any sort of outside problems, the best to ever do it, and he just cannot get out of his own way. And I think that's it's such a big story, because, you know, after the UFC 200 debacle, Dana White comes out, he says, hey, you know, John Jones, I can't trust him. He's never going to be, you know, in main events or headlining cards again. Well, you know, demand put him back in a headlining position at 214. And once again, he cannot get out of his own way. He can't be the big marquee star that the company and that the fans want him to be. And it's tragic in one way, because you're like, man, this poor guy just cannot make the right decision to save his life. And on the flip side of it, you're just like, okay, well, you know, onward and upward. You know, he can't do it, move on to the next person. But it's just an intriguing story, because there's a guy out there and a very talented guy out there that the world knows can carry the sport and can carry the company and make a lot of money for himself because he's so good. And he just doesn't get to be fully used because he's got so many problems. And I think it's very, very unfortunate. That's number three. And the number two story of the year is the whole Michael Bisping, Jordan St. Pierre fight. The story surrounding that, the should it even be a fight, yes or no? And then you actually have it go down and George St. Pierre wins the middleweight championship, and then, you know, he does what everybody thought he would do, which is vacate the belt and move on from there. And it just, I think it really kind of defines and showcases and highlights the conundrum that the UFC is in and how they have to balance how they book fights. Because, look, you know, they're in the business of making money. We all know that. And to do that, you got to put on the biggest fights. But at the same time, you need to maintain integrity within the company and within the divisions. And that's something that they really went against to make this fight. This was the big fight. This was the payday that GSP and Bisping wanted. And the fight that UFC would get the most out of. And to make that fight, they put other fights on the back burner and put other fighters who were deserving of title shots on the back burner to make it happen. And that's a kind of a microcosm of what UFC, where they're at right now as a company, and how they book their fighters and book their events. And the number one story of the year goes to Conor McGregor. You know, just anything and everything he's pretty much touched is big news, because he's the biggest star that MMA has. He had a boxing match with the best pound-for-pound boxer in the world, 4.4 million views, the second most sold pay-per-view domestically of all time. And, you know, he's on a different level. And there's also some negative stories, you know, homophobic slurs and climbing into rings and assaulting referees. You know, he's the guy, I think, the sport in a strange way, in terms of mainstream eyes, goes as he goes. And so you know, whenever he's making news, that's the story. Him as a fighter and as a MMA star is always going to be the story until he's not involved anymore.
That's a very interesting list, because I feel like I have the exact same list, but maybe for totally different reasons. But we are definitely thinking in the same vein. We'll discuss a little bit this after. Number three, I have the exact same one, John Jones. He is a story. It is a human interest. I don't know if you would call it a tragedy, because nothing actually bad has ever happened to him.
That's true.
His violations of the law, he did hit that pregnant woman a couple years ago here in Albuquerque. So I shouldn't say the harm he does tends to just be to the UFC and to his personal reputation. But with that said, everything cleared out for him this year to be that guy, to be the face of the UFC. Dana White seems to be taking more of a reduced role publicly. McGregor and Rousey are seemingly out of the picture. So this was supposed to be John Jones's UFC. This was supposed to be his time to be that guy headed into his 30s as just untouchable. And the fact that we both got a dominant John Jones performance and the typical John Jones fall. This was a very John Jones year, and he only fought once.
Yep.
So I think that definitely merits him being on the list. My number two, I just wrote down the boxing cloud, because I think boxing has shaded everything we look at in MMA this year. Obviously, you did have the Mayweather-McGregor fight, which I think changed a lot of things for the UFC. I think it changed a lot of things of how their fighters look at them, how other businesses look at MMA, how the public as a whole. I'm sure there's tons of people who never even heard of Conor McGregor that found out more about the UFC because of that fight. We don't know if it was a net positive or net negative, but the boxing cloud seems to be hanging over everything, to the point where you hear these rumblings that they're going to start promoting boxing themselves in the UFC. And now every time a fighter is frustrated with what they're doing in the UFC, the automatic go-to answer for them is they're going to start boxing. So I think boxing, it's almost like, you know, they let the devil in the room and now they have to deal with boxing on every corner. So I think it's very interesting how boxing penetrated the UFC and to see where that is going forward. My number one, kind of ambiguous, but you'll know what I'm talking about when I say it. The struggle to maintain momentum. And what I mean by that is, as we've talked about several times on this show today, there were a lot of good moments this year. There were a lot of moments that seemed like awesome, and MMA was back and it was doing its things, but none of those moments ever got to sustain. You had John Jones at the end of UFC 214 being reincarnated. He gets suspended. You have GSP back as a challenger. His title gets ripped from him. You had that string of really awful pay-per-view main events at the beginning of the year with Holman Duranda, which was really, really weird. You had the Tyron Woodley fights. Nothing this year seemed to gain that momentum and that steam, whereas if you look at 2016, really from UFC 196, it was like every other pay-per-view was a masterful pay-per-view that seemed to build off of the momentum that was gained in the previous pay-per-view or so. Even the 2016 events that didn't sell well, like the Bisping Henderson card or the Holloway Pettis card, were very good. This year, the UFC could not build momentum month to month. And that might be their booking philosophy now, where they do more of these money fights and hotshot events, so it's not meant to have this wave of momentum. But I thought the way they were not able to sustain anything, maybe at the end of the year they recouped a little bit of that, and we've talked about before, maybe they were laying the foundation this year. Be that as it may, it doesn't change the fact that they really could not sustain that top-level momentum at any point this year.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And it's what's interesting about, like, your top three stories and mine too, is I think that the residual effects of those stories this year are going to be there next year too. And they're going to be something that is there for the UFC to figure out. That boxing cloud, as you say, you know, it's not going away. You know, the UFC is going to have, you know, or at least not for Conor McGregor. It doesn't seem like he's going to forever going to be kind of clouded with that, because he can always go there and make, you know, a ton of money. I like we talked about last week on the show, I don't think that's going to be his next step, but it's going to be there now that the UFC and Dana White has opened the floodgates to that happening. Same with, you know, the building momentum and the John Jones thing. Like it's stuff that's going to translate into 2018, which I think is going to be something to watch. And at the end of 2018, we may be able to sit back and say, okay, have UFC figured out a way to kind of get around these different stories, or are they still dealing with the same things that they were at the end of this year?
And it's interesting because on both of our lists, I think all three stories really tied together, and they have a similar theme. And it makes me wonder, like you said, where is that going to lead to in the future? And I don't know that we're being so negative on the year the UFC had. I think this year was the hangover, so to speak, from 2016.
Yeah.
2016 was such a high that eventually the bill came due, and this year they were paying a pretty heavy toll. The UFC has had down years before in the past. Remember that 2013, 2014 era didn't look so bright for the UFC, and along came two supernovas in Rousey and McGregor, and all else and everything looked up. So as bad as everything is now, I'm not one of those that likes to slam the door on the UFC, because despite their struggles at creating new stars, they have done it in the past. They have a very recent track record of being successful at it. But it's still interesting to note how spectacular bad everything kind of went this year. Bring it back to pro wrestling, I said this was maybe like 2002. That's what's going to be next year. Well, this might be like the post-WrestleMania 17 era of MMA, where you think is going to go good, but everything just goes the other direction.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's like you can't – I just don't think you can look at or have – you know, look, the UFC were without their two biggest stars for essentially the whole year. I mean, that's tough to overcome for any – you know, for any company. Like, if you're a professional sports team and you lose, you know, one of your, you know, your top quarterback, your top wide receiver, like, that hurts. You can't have the same year that you expected without those guys. And I think, you know, sure, could the UFC have prepared for that a little more, read the tea leaves a little bit better on that? Absolutely. But, you know, the outright removal of Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey from their availability, moving their availability out and taking them away from the UFC. I mean, that starts them way, way behind the starting line. So, you know, factoring that in, you know, it's not as bad as it looks.
And our final category will continue with our theme of negativity, if you will. What was your biggest disappointment this year, Zach?
My biggest disappointment, I'm going to put my biggest disappointment not on a theme, but on a fighter in particular, and that's Amanda Nunes. I, at the end of last year, with that fight against Ronda in front of all those people, I mean, she had such a big audience to witness her and witness her in a big way. I mean, she dominated the greatest quote-unquote women's fighter in the history of MMA at that point, you know, taking on Ronda Rousey when she's making her comeback and then decimating her in a minute with just, you know, just in vicious, vicious fashion. And coming out of that, I thought there was a real opportunity there with her because she's got a fun personality. She's unapologetically confident. She's got that swagger that I think top draws need in the fight game. And it never materialized. I mean, she missed weight for one of her fights. Her fight against Shevchenko was just sheer boredom, and she probably should have lost it. Honestly, I think there's an argument for that. And it just didn't seem like that's one of those moments where the UFC is thinking, okay, look, hey, take the ball and run with it here. You've put yourself on a really nice platform. You have an opportunity to make yourself into a really big star, and she couldn't do it. And going into the year, I really thought she was going to be somebody that would take that next step. And she just totally did not. And for me, that's why disappointment of the year goes to her.
There's a fascinating article written a couple months ago by a legendary wrestling MMA journalist, Dave Meltzer, where he made the same argument where you look at how Holly Holm's career went, where she's won one fight in 3 years, but she beat Ronda Rousey a couple years ago and still able to eat off of that, whereas Amanda Nunes got no rub from beating Rousey. If anything, it seemed like she gained resentment from that, she's brought some of it on herself, and then there's just a certain component of the machinery and the MMA fan base that's conditioned not to like her. And I would very much agree with you. And now, people are not going to believe that we didn't share notes beforehand, but my biggest disappointment is very similar, but it goes a little bit further, and it's the UFC 213 saga. UFC 213 a month before it happened seemed like it was going to be the card of the year.
It did. It really did.
You know, this is the big the big card that they do in Vegas for what they call International Fight Week. And you had, at one point, Gabra and Dillashaw booked for the card. You had the Nunez-Shevchenko card build. Cerrone and Lawler was supposed to be on the thing. Yep. And there was other rumored names that were going to be part of that card. When we got to fight night, we ended up with just an interim title fight between Robert Whittaker and Yoel Romero. That was the only major fight that made it to fight night. Up to the point where earlier in the day, Nunez-Shevchenko was supposed to take place. And you had the whole thing with her pulling out because she didn't feel like she was in a condition to fight. A lot of debate about who handled the decision right there. I think both sides really dropped the ball. She dropped the ball in, you know, not being able to fight, obviously. And I think the UFC sort of, I understood their frustration, but I think the smear of her was really not beneficial to anyone, considering they still had to promote her later on.
Yeah, I totally agree on
so,
that.
So, yeah, UFC totally 13 agree. Could have been so much, and it was so little. I thought for disappointment, you could put John Jones in there, but that's kind of too obvious. And that's the yeah. biggest story of the year, as we put in the top three. So we were very, very similar in how we had that. I do have high hopes for Nunez in the future, although I feel her brand might be damaged a little bit. If she's ever not the champion again, though, I could see her going back on the tear she was on before. I think once she had to be in that top spot, kind of like Tyron Woodley, you get so protective hanging onto that belt because of the financial gain that you lose. People lose sight of how good of a fighter you actually are.
That's a really great point, and she seems just too careful. You know, she just doesn't want to stick her neck out at all once she's gotten that belt, and because of that. You know, yes, she still has the belt, and that's good. But because of that, I don't think she's been able to take full advantage of destroying Rousey like she did. Because nobody's done that to her before, and really, there's nothing to show for it.
Okay, Zach, before we go to break, I'm going to put you on the spot really quick. We didn't make notes for this next topic. Really quickly, what was the WWE event of the year?
Oh, man, WWE event of the year. Let's see. I know WrestleMania 33 comes to mind initially just because it's WrestleMania and because it's such a big event. But to be and I think that's, you know, sometimes that's an obvious one. But to be a little bit more picky about it, I'm going to say TakeOver War Games. That was such a fun card, and I think it had some star-making moments. Aleister Black versus Velveteen Dream, I think, could, you know, be WWE, you know, match of the year if they're really honest with themselves about it. I think it was just such an incredible match. Bringing back War Games was really fun, and it was a fun wrestling show, and the vibe in the building was really great. So yeah, I'm gonna just go with NXT and. Without really truly giving it a ton of thought, TakeOver War Games. I loved it. I had such a fun time watching.
And no argument with those choices either. I will say, just looking back at it in my head and not even being able to wiki it, I think it was the weirdly named Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view was really good this year.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
I actually really did like WrestleMania a lot this year. It just wasn't fun to watch because it's like 40 hours long.
Exhausted
at the end. And I think there's some strategy that they – now that they know that their content is basically on demand, if you put in isolation almost any match from WrestleMania this year, they were of extremely high quality. So I think it's a very rewatchable WrestleMania so long as you don't have to rewatch it in one sitting.
Exactly. Totally. For Cyber Monday, I bought the WrestleMania 33 Blu-ray and haven't been watching it in a 4-hour burst, but watching like match here, match there, the star power was amazing and the matches delivered, even matches like Goldberg against Brock Lesnar that I thought would just stink the joint up, ended up being really, really good and really entertaining. So it's a heck of a show. And then you add in the Hardys were kind of returning, you're getting that nostalgia pop there, which I enjoyed a lot too.
Okay, let's go to our final break of the year, and then when we come back, we'll give a quick preview of UFC 219.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here, I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
And we're back with you for the final segment on MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans of the Year. Hope you guys have enjoyed it so far. I've had about roughly a six-month run here, and it's been a really fun show to do. I don't know any other MMA podcast that can just get into discussion about WrestleMania on the drop of a hat. That's what makes doing this so fun.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, so by the time you're listening to this, the next event in the UFC will be UFC 219. Me and Zach are going to run down the main card, give our broad predictions, but I should give the disclaimer. As I said at the top of the show, we are recording this on December 17th. So if one of these fights falls out, or if something crazy happens where the result will obviously be much different than it is, please do not blame us. Understand that we are recording this well in advance, and if something does fall out, just consider it a time capsule of what could have been. Okay, and in the main event, we have a highly anticipated main event. It's interesting that for an event that's so anticipated, but yet the main event seems in such little question. For the featherweight championship, we have Chris Cyborg defending against Holly Holm. Who do you got in this one, Zach?
I'm taking Chris Cyborg. I just don't see a scenario in which Holm can win. I mean, I think she's overmatched in virtually every way. And aside from, you know, kind of a lucky punch here or lucky kick there or a drastic misstep on the part of Cyborg, I don't see it going any other way. So I'm taking Cyborg handily.
I'm going to go with Cyborg as well. The only, I think, glimmer of hope that Holly Holm does have is in her those two victories we talked about she had in the last 2 years. She got him when another fighter was being aggressive. Cyborg's very aggressive, so there is a chance she could catch her with some counter-striking, but I don't think that's going to happen. I'm going to go with Cyborg here. The returning Khabib Nurmagomedov taking on Edson Barboza. Let's see if this fight holds up. If it does happen, I'm going to take Khabib. When he does fight, he's pretty unstoppable. Who you got, Zach?
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath on this one because of Khabib's track record. But you're right. When he fights, he's one of the best. And for as good as I think Barboza is, I don't see him walking out as the winner. So I think Khabib wins and kind of inserts himself into the title conversation with that victory. He's a guy that if he wins this fight, depending on how things go with Conor McGregor, could be once again on a fast track to fight Tony Ferguson in the early part of next year.
We've got Jimmy Rivera taking on John Lineker in a very interesting bantamweight fight. We don't know what the future really of the bantamweight division is going to be, but this fight, specifically from Jimmy Rivera's side of it, could be a long way of telling who gets the next title shot. I'm going to go with Rivera here. Who do you got, Zach?
I'm going with Rivera too. Yeah. He seems just like the better fighter, the eye test. Pass the eye test of the better fighter, I think he's going to get the victory. And then he will be somebody to look at going into next year as well.
In women's strawweight action, we have the surging Cynthia Carvalho taking on Carla Esparza. I'm going to go with Carvalho here. She really has done well with all the hype that's been behind her. She's lived up to a lot of it. And I think this will be a good spot for her. What do you think?
Yeah, man, as much as I want to disagree to make these conversations a little bit more interesting, I'm going to agree with you on that. She's on a roll, and I think she is facing an opponent that doesn't pose too much of a threat to her, and I think she's going to continue that role at 219.
Well, Zach, we are pre-taping this, so maybe we should go back and have completely contrarian opinions.
You're right.
Okay, and what will probably be the main card opener, maybe the low-key most anticipated fight of the year, Carlos Condit returns after a long, long layoff to take on Neil Magny. I really want to pick Condit here because I think he's everybody's sentimental favorite, but this guy has spent almost a year and a half of exile from MMA, and not including the fight that he had in the interim, where I think the guy has checked out. He probably still can be a good fighter, but I'm going to take Magny here. I think Condit in history will go down as a much better fighter than someone like Neil Magny, but I think this is going to be Magny's night. What do you think?
All right, I'll disagree with you on that one. I think I'm going to give it to Condit for two reasons. One, because he is kind of the perennial favorite, and he's one of my favorite fighters too. So I there's that part of me that wants just to see him win. And also from just a fight standpoint, I as I've said on the show a lot of times, I like pulling for fighters and picking fighters that I believe have something to fight for. And I mean, he's coming back after a long layoff. I don't think he wants to, you know, stink the joint up. And because of that, I think he just brings a little bit more with him to the octagon that night. And I think he's going to eke one out.
And with that, that'll wrap up our 2017 Year in Review edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Zach, want to give any final thoughts, give any plugs of where people can find you?
Yeah, no, it's been a heck of a year. I've had a blast on the show. Looking forward to continuing in 2018, and it should be an exciting year, maybe even better than solid than 2017. But you can find me all over MMA Torch and PW Torch. My MMA Torch weekly column drops on Thursdays, tackling current events or, you know, editorial takes on certain happenings in the MMA world. You can find me on the PW Torch side of things as the beats guy and TV reporter for 205 Live. And you can also check out various news and notes and analysis on the events of the day-to-day MMA world via the MMA Torch news digests as well. So, and you can follow me on Twitter at ZHeyDorn. That's at ZHeyDorn. 99.9% of tweets are pro wrestling and MMA related. So it's been a heck of a year. I'm excited for next year.
Great. And you can follow me on Twitter at Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos. It's mostly pro wrestling and MMA, but I make no guarantees that I'll stay on topic. And you can follow the brand also at MMA Torch. Please go to MMA Torch. We got a ton of new and interesting content that we're working on to get up on that site to make it unique. We recently put up a Twitter diary of one of our contributors who was at the UFC Winnipeg event to see firsthand what it was like to be there in the arena. And don't forget, also check out all the sister sites, PW Podcasts, PW Torch, and of course, PW Torch Livecast. For Robert, I am Zach. We will see you in 2017.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Wade Keller Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects, and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is love.